Hello, and welcome to What is Innovation? The podcast that explores the reality of a word that is in danger of losing its meaning altogether. This podcast is produced by Outlast Consulting, LLC, a boutique consultancy that helps companies use innovation principles to solve their toughest business problems. I'm your host, Jared Simmons, and I'm so excited to have William A. Lumpkin. William A. Lumpkin is head of new product strategy and business development for Alexion, AstraZeneca Rare Disease Business Unit. His business acumen, enterprise leadership, and passion for cross-functional collaboration helps bring new medicines to people living with rare diseases across the world. Prior to Alexion, he held a diverse set of U.S. and global commercial leadership roles at Takeda, Baxter, Baxalta, Shire, and Procter & Gamble, spanning functional disciplines, product life cycles, and therapeutic areas. William is a proud father of three, loving husband, and resilient Indiana University sports fan. He also maintains interests in urban community development initiatives and was on faculty at the University of North Carolina Keenan Flagler School of Business online MBA program. He earned his MBA from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business and BS in Finance from Indiana University. Will, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I'm excited to reconnect and learn from you a little bit today.
Jared, I'm happy to be here. And as you called out earlier, the length of time since we last connected is quite humbling. It's reminding me that I am getting up there a little bit in age. So I need to, one, do a better job of staying connected, and two, not let so much time go past, especially for people that I care about. So thanks for reaching out and bringing us together.
Yeah, man, my pleasure. And it has been a long time. And I'm excited to hear about what you've been up to and what you've done since last we spoke. So why don't we dive right in? What, in your mind, is innovation?
So I'll say innovation is finding a way. You know, I think my view on innovation is largely through a corporate context. Mm-hmm. And having worked within large organizations, a lot of the game-breaking, you know, demonstrable change that we see in society, it may not necessarily come through these large organizations that I work in, but what they do have the opportunity to do is scale and ensure that more people are able to access those innovations. So what I think about innovation within the context that I work in, it's, again, it's about finding a way to navigate some of those structures, the internal governance, the bureaucracy, and sometimes, you know, people that may yes. otherwise be in the way of these solutions finding their way to the appropriate audience.
Yeah, no, that's well said. Innovation is finding a way. That is elegant. I love that. You mentioned people as part of that sort of experience, the innovation experience in the corporate world. And I think that is an element of innovation that is often overlooked and underappreciated. Can you tell me more about your view on how people impact innovation?
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, when you work on cross-functional teams, as an example, you have people entering with a bias towards whatever their specific agenda might be. So in my set of experiences, one of the cool things about having bounced around from different functions, and at this point, I've literally done every function that you can do. You know, starting in finance, yeah. in marketing, strategy, analytics, sales, operations, having a chance to touch a little bit of everything gives me a greater appreciation for where people are coming from. Mm-hmm. But recognizing that because many people don't get the benefit of diversifying their experiences, you sometimes have to meet them where they are to help them get out of the way yeah. of the, you know, the broader team's good. So it's much less of a, at least from my experience, you know, an intentional barrier or of an single individual being, you know, intentionally disruptive or delaying of progress, but more because we are in these organizations often given a specific remit that moving outside of that frame is sometimes difficult. And when you have 8 people doing that for their specific function, it can take a long time sometimes to get things through.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. I think a lot of times what people interpret as
intentional obstruction is actually just a misalignment of incentives, and individuals don't always understand the broader picture and the way that things fit together. So I can imagine your experience is very useful in terms of helping people get from, as you said, where they are to that sort of broader view of here's the context of what's going on in the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I've always been more engaged and receptive when I am able to see the bigger or broader picture.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly an important concept to pull through.
Yeah. Yeah. And that bigger picture can take a lot of different forms, I think. You and I met through some philanthropic work that we did together, building houses in, I think it was the Dominican Republic.
That's right.
Yeah. That was a fun trip. So philanthropy, I know, is a big part of your view of the world. It's part of my view of the world. And I think when you step back and talk about in the corporate context, the bigger picture, I think that has one lens on it, but there's a lot of different lenses you can put on what the bigger picture might look like.
Yeah. I mean, say outside of work, if your question is, what do I see as the bigger picture ultimately in my life? You know, I think work is a means to an end, is not the end. I certainly don't, even when asked, like, what do I do? You know, mm-hmm. I usually respond with, I'm a dad and a husband and, you know, somebody that's really trying to be a productive member of the, you know, the broader community, because mm-hmm. ultimately that's what matters to me, is what am I meaningfully contributing to the betterment of other people. Now, I get to, through my work, influence and impact people's lives, either directly if they're on my team and trying to help them have the type of experience through their work that they desire.
Mm-hmm.
But also through the type of work that I do working in pharmaceuticals, and particularly in rare disease. The really cool thing about everything that we sell, which is a little bit different from when I started my career selling dental floss and toothbrushes, is that, you know, we literally only bring medicines to market that are helping serve people that have rare and devastating conditions. So mm-hmm. without, you know, in the absence of these treatments being available, their lives would be much, much different.
Right.
I didn't have the stomach to go to med school or be a healthcare professional. But to play a role in bringing a solution to them is something that definitely fulfills a portion of my purpose.
Mm.
And it's even better that it allows or affords an opportunity to then go out and do some of those philanthropic things that you, quite frankly, helped introduce me to in a very meaningful way many years ago. So I did want to take the time to thank you and others from GiveBack, you know, for that exposure, because it was just something that I previously wasn't thinking was going to be a, you know, material part of my life.
Yeah.
But certainly something that I've carried forward in the best ways that I can.
It was a wonderful experience, and that, you know, being able to work together in that context, I think changed us all. Most of the people I'm still in contact with are still trying to carry that forward. And it was a great experience for a lot of people. I'm glad you had a positive experience with that as well. I wonder if, you know, you've got this broader view of the big picture that what you're working on today actually serves, you know, this product you're helping to deliver to the market is changing lives in a very tangible way. I wonder if your point of view on things affects the way you interact with people on a day-to-day basis as well, your employees, your peers, the leadership. And I wonder if that makes you more effective as an innovator and a collaborator within the space.
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say, you know, a couple of things when I'm introducing myself to new teams. You know, what matters to me the most is that I earn their trust. Mm. Especially my direct team, and I'm going to work actively to deliver that by mm-hmm. being proactive and communicator to avoid surprises. And I think also I try, after receiving coaching over the years, to really approach things from from an empathetic lens.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, whether it's, again, recognizing that people might not have all the context, recognizing that people have different motivations and right. certain incentives will resonate with others, and sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
I hope that the way that I show up reflects me trying to be a whole person at work every day,
right?
And trying to facilitate or create an environment in which everybody that I'm working with feels the capacity to be who they are all day long, and it not need to be a work persona, a home persona.
Yeah.
But we're just motivated and inspired by a mission to do well and good. And, you know, as a result, we put our energy towards that. and not glorifying ourselves or, you know, seeking our own individual glory.
Yeah.
But in fact, you know, against that broader mission and doing it in a way where we feel comfortable and confident in how we're showing up.
That's amazing stuff. I'm really struck by your ability to be successful in outside looking in. People talk about pharmaceuticals. The first thing you think of is, you know, high pressure, high stakes, high margin. You know, you don't think of people with your more empathetic, people-focused approach, just as an industry, when you think about the face of the industry. Mm-hmm. And so it's really great to hear someone who's been successful in that industry talk in these terms, because it's important for people to understand that there's no such thing as an industry when it comes to the day-to-day experience. And I think sometimes entire companies and entire organizations get these labels that really, really only apply to certain aspects or certain areas that are easily identified and sometimes blown out of proportion.
Yeah. We're talking about people.
Right.
Right. And I know there's, don't get me wrong, I understand the financial
right.
commitments that large companies have to shareholders. And I, you know, I could go on about that. But at the end of the day, the business only works if you're providing real value to people. And the only way that you can provide real value as a business is through people. So and the historical, I guess, view of the industry, yeah, don't get me wrong, coming into it, I quite frankly was a little hesitant myself, just coming from a place where I didn't have prior or previous exposure before getting in. But what I've been, you know, really thankful for is I've continuously encountered leaders who have that same orientation. And have an appreciation for the fact that, regardless of, again, what may be said about, you know, the price point or the,
right.
you know, the nature of the culture of, you know, some of these organizations, inevitably it's a hyper focus on delivering meaningful solutions for people, doing that through people, and it's been a, you know, a favorable experience for me as a result.
Nice, yeah. If someone like you is comfortable in that industry, I now know that it can't be everything that people make it out to be from time to time. I love your definition of what innovation is around in terms of finding a way and, you know, the people-focused lens that you put on that. What isn't innovation?
Yeah, it's not saying you're innovative.
I love that. Yep.
It's not just simply a declarative statement or words on a page. It goes back to the action of, in my definition, finding a way.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm really trying to say is oftentimes people will just index on we're being creative or we're being innovative and we're going to have lunch catered in to this
working session.
Uniquely designed, yeah. you know, room by sitting in orange or pink chairs or, you know, yellow couches is going to make us, right. you know, be more innovative by osmosis. And it's not that, you know, it really isn't. And one of the cool things that I've had even more recently, the benefit of is getting closer to, you know, kind of the scientists at our company.
Yeah.
And what scientists do really well is they set, you know, they have a hypothesis, they have very specific measures, you know, for outcomes. They develop a plan to test that hypothesis, and at the end of the day you prove or disprove
right.
you know, that hypothesis. And it's an iterative thing. It's not necessarily right or wrong. It's just you're continuously learning and building. And you know that I think is actually an even more tangible way to mobilize innovation across organizations is by creating an environment where people feel that it's okay to fail, so to speak, or at least have a disproved hypothesis, but more about the, you know, the process,
right.
the commitment to the process, the commitment to continuing to challenge yourself to come up with the new ideas and test those ideas. And if those ideas work, roll them out as quickly as possible. And if they don't, do a postmortem and figure out what aspects of it that you can learn and build from.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping as I ascend to greater roles and responsibilities within organizations that I can take what I've learned from scientists and apply that to, you know, not only continue finding a way, but give people a more pragmatic approach to doing that and setting up incentives to reward people for, you know, for taking on the challenge of, you know, finding new ways to do things within large organizations.
Mm. Yeah, the world needs more of that. I think what you highlight about scientists is really important in terms of that hypothesis-driven mindset. And it's probably a real kind of gap. And as you said, you know, innovation isn't getting people into a room with a bunch of glass walls and post-its and chairs and whatnot. It comes down to your actions and how you organize yourself to take action. And that's, I think, that hypothesis-driven process is a great example of the difference between talking about innovation and delivering innovation. One thing I've found in sort of sitting in an intersection between marketing and sales and, you know, R&D and supply, research and development, supply, the technical organizations, sitting in a role as almost a translator for that group, is that scientists, to your point, they test hypotheses and marketers test products. And that's why they tend to talk past each other, because marketers tend to test propositions and scientists tend to test ideas, concepts, hypotheses to learn and understand. And so if a proposition fails, to a scientist, you've learned something, you've tested, you've proven or disproven a hypothesis. And to, you know, the classic traditional marketer, if a product fails, it doesn't work. And so kind of meeting in the middle in sort of a hypothesis-driven product mindset, I think is the best way to kind of get everybody on the same page and to sort of bring the best of both worlds, where, you know, that hypothesis-driven framework helps you learn and iterate. And nowhere in the scientific method and nowhere in engineering school do they talk about failure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That whole concept came from the marketing product side of things. You know, products either work or they're successful or they fail because of these criteria. And so when people talk about failure, I try to help them understand, like, true scientists who are hypothesis driven don't have that concept. It's, this is what I think will happen. It either did happen or it didn't. But either way, I'm smarter than I was pre-test, you know?
So, yeah, no, I think that's right. Though at the same time, which you can appreciate, especially depending on where you sit along the commercialization cycle.
Yes.
If I own a P&L and I don't hit my number.
My goodness.
That is a definitive failure.
Failure. Exactly. Exactly.
And that's binary, because I made a commitment. That commitment oftentimes is in some form or fashion finding its way to Wall Street. And if we don't hit our number on a quarterly basis or, you know, biannual basis or annual basis, then there will be implications as a result.
Oh, yes. Consequences, for sure.
That part of it is, you know, at least I'd say rational, why there's that tension between the two.
Yes.
But what you and I both, I think, agree on is, in the long run, an organization is best served by not seeing things as, or any particular instance or outcome as a failure, but more so as an opportunity to learn.
Yep.
Again, I can selfishly do that with my career. Mm-hmm. As an individual, I can certainly see it that way.
Yeah.
Now, certainly never want to be in a position where I'm not meeting my committed objective, but at the same time, I also can appreciate from every experience, from every conversation, from every interaction that I have with anybody, that there's something to be learned from it. And for me, that's been a better orientation, maybe a way to keep myself sane in highly competitive, intense roles.
Yes.
That if the worst case scenario is I've learned something new, then I'm better off as a human, you know, as a result.
That's a great call out. When you make a commitment, that's right. When you make a commitment to the street, when you make a commitment to yourself, when you make a commitment to the organization, that does immediately create a succeed, fail, pass, fail kind of situation, for sure. I think what's unique in professional development, personal development, and also in the corporate world is, how can you minimize the learning involved in those steps? How can you learn in advance of that? Be hypothesis driven before you're making the commitment, so that commitment is more robust and less likely to produce a failure post-commitment.
Yeah.
You want to fail pre-commitment and not post-commitment.
Yeah, no, definitely agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I love how you connected your individual development to sort of the corporate space. What are some of the things that have really shaped the way you view professional development, or, you know, experience professional development in the corporate space?
Yeah, I think one is just being intentional about not letting myself get stale.
Yeah.
So knowing that I've got a varied set of interests. I've always been the type of person to do a bunch of things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And as a quick aside, this is in part how I ended up meeting you, because when I first started my career, I really just tried to dive in and be laser focused on being an excellent financial analyst at Procter & Gamble.
Yeah.
And what I quickly learned was, you know, having come from an entire life to date, where I was a student, an athlete, a leader in community groups and organizations, to try to take that who I was and be focused on one thing, it wasn't a good fit.
And
it wasn't until I got more involved in some of those things that I started feeling more like myself, and that I feel like my learning was able to expand and find connections to things outside of work that made me better at work, you know, as a result. So one of those, you know, just kind of those principles then that I picked up was, don't let yourself get stale. Make sure that you're always learning. And this is ultimately being true, you know, to who I am, or at least who I see myself as. So approaching now every role or experience with that orientation that I'm going to learn something from it, kind of worst case.
Yeah.
And as a result, being more willing to go after those things that scare me, because if it's scary, then that means the learning curve is going to be even more enriching, you know, as a result. And, you know, doing those things ultimately to use my energy to enrich the lives of others is another way, I think, that helps me stay inspired and motivated and excited, you know, to navigate the world.
Yeah, that excitement that you're describing. One thing I've found is that, I mean, just listening to your description, that excitement is important, because it feeds your energy to kind of push through the hard times. I think if you can't find something to kind of get energized and excited about in your work, that's when I kind of look around and go, all right, it's time to do something else. It's time to find something else. And adding on top of what you're already doing, if it adds excitement, can kind of be a net energy positive, if that makes sense, for me anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think people, you know, structurally, they try to talk about like the strategy and the mission and the vision, those needing to be well constructed in order to keep a broader team engaged. And I think that's true to an extent, but inevitably it's that individual connection to those things that really matters.
Yeah,
because we can have a great ambition as an organization, but if I don't feel connected to it and inspired and excited behind it,
right,
then I'm not going to be my best self or give my best effort towards reaching it.
Yeah. And frankly, in the corporate world, as a Black man, personally, I think energy and finding something you really connect with is even more important in a lot of ways, because of just the extra stuff that people of color have to deal with in the workplace. I think sometimes it's easy for us to sort of minimize the importance of finding something you're passionate about, because, you know, I have a good job and, you know, all these other things. But that energy is I think, even more important given the additional things that you have to deal with in the corporate world.
Yeah, I mean, the additional stuff, which is difficult to articulate even in a 30-minute discussion.
Yep.
As you can appreciate, that's a very broad and encompassing.
That's for the next topic. We'll have to have you back to talk about that.
Yeah, but I agree in that your ability to connect, like really authentically connect to what you're doing, is to me the biggest deciding factor on your success.
Mm-hmm.
So every individual gravitates towards different things, but I can tell you, for me, the only reason that I'm still able to and be sane while doing it, stay in corporate America, is because I've found a level of comfort with being me all day long.
Yeah.
And only doing things that are inspiring, engaging, motivating, and doing it in a way that isn't me changing my voice, that isn't me, definitely not me, compromising my character.
Right.
And quite frankly, these are all things that I was skeptical of,
right,
that I could, any time of my life, continue to ascend within any organization while being Will from Dayton,
right.
it was just something that I wasn't all that confident in.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, what's happened over time as I've gotten more comfortable with being me,
yeah,
is I found more success.
And mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a positive or direct correlation that many people find when they're not, when they're spending less time pretending or assimilating in a negative way,
mm-hmm.
that they're then able to spend their time on things like innovation,
yeah.
which is kind of the premise of your focus with this podcast.
No, it's all connected, I think. And I think you articulated it well. It's a part of the broader construct of the corporate space that is complex in terms of talking about it, but it is real and it's palpable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something you can feel in the room, and it affects innovation in the same way it affects everything else. Any other final parting words of wisdom or advice for listeners out there? I mean, you've done so many different things. Like you said, you referenced you're an athlete, and I know you've suffered long in your support of the Hoosier football, but I'm sure brighter days are coming. I just had to work that in there. It wasn't even a any other advice for folks out there?
Yeah, I think one, be careful who you take advice from.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to everybody, but be careful not to internalize things because everybody has their own unique perspective and experience of the world. So
yes,
you can learn from people, but tread lightly.
Yes.
But if you are willing to listen to anything that I have to say, I would say to really challenge yourself to pursue those things that you're most passionate about. Don't let money or I guess you can get fame to some extent,
mm-hmm. yeah.
through your work be the ultimate motivating factor, because it's not going to last. Find things that excite you, that help you wake up with a sense of purpose where you can go be your best self, and let that motivation guide you towards impacting the world in a meaningful and positive way.
Well said, my friend, and inspiring and engaging as always. I really appreciate you making the time to talk with me after, let's just call it, so many years. And I'm excited for everything you've accomplished in the corporate world and everything you've done for others and the family you've built. So thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to doing a better job of staying in touch.
Yeah, hopefully you can take something from that. It's hard. It's hard doing this. So I commend you even more that you're able to put together a really cool set of discussions on a weekly basis almost through this podcast. So congratulations on this and all the best.
Thank you so much, man. Take care.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this week's show. You can drop us a line on Twitter at OutlastLLC, OutlastLLC, or follow us on LinkedIn where we're Outlast Consulting. Until next time, keep innovating, whatever that means.